From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. February is Black History Month, and today we are hearing about how the music that flowed from black churches influenced the likes of Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin and contemporary artists like Chance the Rapper. Here's Blessings from his Grammy-winning rap album, Coloring Book.
Good God!
That song references Reverend James Moore's When the Praises of God Go Up, the Blessings Come Down. And it's the kind of musical lineage traced in gospel roots of rock and soul. It's hosted by Grammy Award-winning gospel musician Cece Winans. And this four-part series airs on GPB Radio starting this Sunday. Historian and founder of the Journal of Gospel Music, Bob Maravich, contributed to the project and is joining us from Chicago. Bob, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Virginia, for having me on the show.
I'm wondering, the blues, rhythm and blues, soul, these are generally thought of as earthy, maybe even lusty forms of music. And we've all heard sex and drugs and rock and roll. How does the music of praise come into all this?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, blues and R&B and soul got some of its earthiness from gospel. And gospel got some of its earthiness from the Pentecostal church. And all of it came from West Africa, ultimately, when enslaved Africans were brought here from that area. They brought their religion and the sound of their religion and really the sound of their culture with them.
Well, let's look at how that actually sounds. The radio documentary follows this evolution, and one of the first popular gospel songs made right here in Atlanta in 1947 by Leroy Abernathy. Let's hear just a little bit of Gospel Boogie.
Jesus isn't coming from his throne on high. Many are the weary and the lonely stare. They're gonna wish they hadn't done the things that they had. How you gonna feel about the things he'll say
on that judgment day?
Abernathy was a white Southerner. Bob, were they playing this kind of music in white churches at the time?
They were. It was a sound called Southern Gospel. And so groups like Leroy Abernathy's group, I think it's the Homeland Harmony Quartet and the Statesmen and the Blackwood Brothers, they listened to black gospel quartets as black gospel quartets listened to the white quartets on the radio and learned from one another. So a lot of what you heard in that particular song came from the African-American quartet tradition. And then, interestingly enough, people like Sister Rosetta Tharpe, a very famous gospel singer, and the Pilgrim Travelers, a very famous gospel quartet, sang Gospel Boogie as well. So a lot of interplay between the two.
So that seems to characterize this evolution. Let's hear just a little bit. Pioneering Sister Rosetta Tharpe, you mentioned her. She brought electricity and energy to her rock gospel sound. Here's a little bit of Down by the Riverside, came out in 1949.
I feel so bad in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
I feel so bad in the evening.
In the evening.
That's why I'm going to the river to wash my sins away. I'm going to lay down my heavy load
down
by the riverside.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe there, she started in the Pentecostal church in her hometown in Arkansas, and her career really took off when she started playing nightclubs in New York City. So did she change the message of the music to reach the secular audience?
She changed. She really didn't change the message as much as she just changed the sound. I mean, gospel music, even back before Sister Tharpe, when Thomas A. Dorsey, who's considered the father of gospel music, also from Georgia, not far from Atlanta, actually lived in Atlanta for a while. Gospel music has always sort of blended the sound of the city, whatever was the predominant African-American popular music style with religious lyrics. And it really was a reaction, I would say, to the sort of austere Protestant hymnody that after a while wasn't necessarily resonating with the African-American churchgoer who wanted songs that were spirit-filled, that spoke to their own situation. And people like Sister Tharpe could get that message across with her earthiness, with her just being just down to earth and speaking from her heart to someone else's heart.
But how about that? Playing in clubs. I mean, were there other artists that followed in this, in the clubs on Saturday night, in the pews come Sunday morning model?
There, you know, not many. That was a very taboo thing. In fact, when Sister Tharpe went and performed in the clubs, she got a lot of flack from the African-American church community who felt you did not serve two masters. Now, Sister Tharp was really, she probably walked the line better than most and, in fact, was able to not lose her audience or lose her gospel career by, you know, spending a little time in the clubs and working with Lucky Millinder and such. She actually, I think, continued to work well in the church community, in part because she really never left the church. That happened to a number of artists where they, you know, the allure of popular music, and as time went on after Second World War, the money was there. It was a challenge to say, do I continue to work the gospel circuit, work in the churches for the Lord, or what happens if somebody offers me $50,000 and I've got a family to feed? It was a very very important decision to make. The grand majority of artists, however, chose to stay in the church.
Yeah, I would encourage listeners to watch videos of her playing. It's just wonderful to see. She's fantastic. And this fierce guitarist combining the sacred and the secular. How did we hear her music and her guitar playing influenced rock and roll music and early soul and R&B?
Well, yes. Her guitar playing in particular is vastly significant to rock and roll, in large part because Sister Tharp would go overseas and she would play on tours of Europe, sometimes in the combination of blues artists and sometimes in the combination of gospel artists. And so some of the blues and rock, British invasion artists were hearing her there and emulating her guitar licks for their own. So when you fast forward to people like the Rolling Stones and Cream and Eric Clapton, a lot of those artists heard Sister Tharp in Europe, in England, and decided they were going to take some of her licks for their own.
But this is certainly not a name we hear in the same way that Elvis Presley or Jerry Lee Lewis. These are people often credited for bringing rock and roll to the masses. So to what extent have African Americans in general and Black women in particular been left out of this retelling of the history of rock and roll?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. I think gospel hasn't gotten the same attention as blues, R&B, soul, but it should. In fact, all the music that we sort of are listening to even now, ultimately, I believe, comes from some part of gospel. I mean, I've always said the African American church was the best music school. African American artists, regardless of genre, if they were in church, they were singing in the choir. They were even in the Sunshine Band as little kids. And what that meant was that they were learning music. They were also learning stage comportment, confidence. And so all of these things really taught many lessons that helped artists in the future. So how do you put that aside if you're a Sam Cooke or if you're an Aretha Franklin or you're a James Brown? You can't put that church learning aside and do something else. It's going to be part of you always. And I just think that gospel, that history, that the essence of rock and soul that comes out of gospel has not gotten the attention because gospel has sort of been forgotten in the past. And I think it needs to be given greater credence in terms of its overall contribution to American popular music, period.
That's Bob Maravich, gospel historian who contributed to GPB's upcoming series. It's actually produced at WXPN, but it is airing on GPB coming on Sunday. It's called The Gospel Roots of Rock and Soul. And Bob, I really want to pick up on that because just around the time that Aretha Franklin died last fall, I listened to an interview and they had some really early recordings of her singing in church. It was just spellbinding. And of course, you know, for Sister Rosetta Tharpe is known as the godmother of soul. Aretha was its undisputed queen, carved her own path in R&B music and got to the top of the charts. Here's just a little bit of one of her songs, Think.
But it don't take too much time to see what you're doing to me. You better think about what you're trying to do to me, yeah. Think, let your mind go, let yourself be free. Oh, freedom.
Bob, how did Aretha build on her gospel base and expand it?
Well, she went into pop music fairly early, but she, you know, really what it was is she, it was right about the time when you really started to hear soul music coming out. And when you listen to Aretha, you hear shades of Clara Ward, who is a famous gospel singer. And I think it spoke to people in the same way that the gospel music did. And I think this goes back again to Thomas Dorsey recognizing that if people are feeling better, people are feeling renewed in a secular way through songs about love or songs about relationships, couldn't the same thing happen in the church? And it's a reverse for Aretha. She took that feeling of hope and inspiration in the church and just brought it into the relationship arena, into the secular arena. So it's sort of, it's the same. The interesting thing about black music is that it all does come essentially from the same source. You know, in West Africa, all music was sacred, all music was secular. And so what Aretha did was to tap into that church feeling of enthusiasm and passion and just provide a new set of lyrics. But it touched people the same way listening to the radio or seeing her on television or in live that they would have had in church, just listening to the same kind of sound but with a different lyric.
Yeah, let's listen to how lyrics were used by Mahalia Jackson and that soaring, spirited feeling. She started singing in church in New Orleans and eventually toured around the world with gospel hits. Here is Move On Up a Little Higher, which remains one of the best-selling, in fact, the best-selling gospel records of all time.
We're gonna live on forever.
Reverend Herbert Brewster wrote that song, came out in 1947, projected just strength and transcendence for the African-American community. And he once said these were dangerous things to say, but you could sing them. So how did these gospel songs of the time play into the civil rights struggle?
Well, right. In fact, that song, you know, I just was thinking about it here in Chicago. It was recorded not far from where I'm sitting. You know, it's the spiritual piece of it. I think gospel, like Move On Up a Little Higher, it wasn't a political message overtly, but intrinsically it was. It was a music of empowerment. And here was a woman who exuded passion, saying, we can make this happen. We individually and collectively can make this world better, even if it's just one person at a time. And so gospel music, you know, some of it had a political component, but most of it was more of the sense of what I call a more of a spiritual political aspect, where it was an empowerment of a people to say, enough is enough. We are individuals. We are going to use the language of music to uplift ourselves, and in doing so, hope to turn the hearts of others.
She was also active in the civil rights movement, a favorite of Dr. Martin Luther King, an integral part of the March on Washington. Did other gospel artists use their platform to fight for civil rights?
They did. Mahalia Jackson, certainly one of the most important, but also people like Dorothy Love Coates of Birmingham, Alabama, who not only, you know, marched with Dr. King and did a lot for the civil rights movement, but then later sang songs that were more explicitly political than Mahalia Jackson ever would. A group called the Loving Sisters of Arkansas, they also marched with King. Reverend C.L. Franklin, going back to Aretha, her father, very active. Mavis Staples from here in Chicago and the Staples Singers really supported Dr. King. Mahalia Jackson had a saying one time. She said, there are people who sing and say, and then there are those who do. And she liked the doers. So there, you know, there were some gospel artists, as were at any kind of artists, who were afraid to risk their career by supporting the civil rights movement in fear that they would not be played on radio and so forth. But after 1960, you started to hear that change. And, you know, but there were people like Dorothy Love Coates, Inez Andrews, Mahalia Jackson, the Staples Singers, who not only sang the message, but marched and protested as well.
And one component from gospel that we still hear today is that big, booming gospel choir. Beyoncé's used it on stage, Kanye West, Ariana Grande, among many artists who've borrowed the sound. Here's a little bit from Grande's song, God is a Woman.
God is a woman. It lingers when we're done. You believe God.
So, Bob, when did this trend really appear in popular music, and why is it still used today?
Well, you know, I sort of trace it back to the 80s. I mean, it probably goes back much further, but I want to talk about I Want to Know What Love Is, when Foreigner brought the New Jersey Mass Choir to back them on that song. And so really, for the first time, you were hearing a secular song, a popular song, with a background of a gospel chorus. And that warms my heart, Virginia, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I am probably one of the most outspoken people in terms of giving the gospel chorus its propers in terms of the history. This is where really gospel started. I mean, there were singers, there were, you know, soloists, but Thomas Dorsey started the first gospel chorus here in Chicago in 1931. And this sound is emblematic of gospel. It has influenced so much, so many people, not only people that came out of the gospel chorus and went on to become singers, soloists, but also it is what we know as gospel oftentimes in popular culture. If we think of gospel, we think of a choir and the powerful sound of that choir, which even if you are an atheist, sometimes can really turn your heart to listen to the wonderful music out of the gospel chorus.
Well, Bob, there's so much more to explore in the series that we're airing on GPB. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Virginia, for having me on.
All right, we're going to go out with a little bit more of Sister Rosetta Tharpe, because we just can't get enough of her. Strange things happening every day. Bob Maravich is founder of the Journal of Gospel Music, and you can hear his contributions. That's on a new show, Gospel Roots of Rock and Soul, the four-part series. It's a documentary series. It starts this Sunday on GPB at 10 o'clock. Now, coming up, we're going to hear from a couple high school students, or one high school student, showing off his theater chops in the Thescon. That's coming up when On Second Thought continues.
There are strange things happening every day. Every day.